And now to the racial justice issue of immigration. The Southern Poverty Law Center says Black immigrants were eligible for naturalization beginning in 1870, but historical and legislative records show efforts to limit the number of people of color who could become U.S. citizens. And today, Black immigrants, they continue to face heightened detention and deportation. What do you want to know about the experiences of Black LGBTQIA plus immigrants? Did your family come from Latin America or the Caribbean or somewhere in Africa? Where did you find community when you arrived? Did you feel you could retain your individual or national identity? It's 800-642-1234. Deborah A. is an East African Southern-raised community organizer. She is national organizer for the Black LGBTQIA plus migrant project. She co-founded the UndocuBlack Network, advocating for current and formerly undocumented Black immigrants in the U.S. Deborah, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
Good morning. We have seen the Biden administration take steps to reverse a number of the Trump era zero tolerance, harsh racist immigration tactics. Can you take stock for us, though? Where are the policy decisions not measuring up, failing to account for the lived experiences of foreign-born Black people living in the U.S.?
Yeah, we have been extraordinarily disappointed in the current administration's failure to live up to its words these first 6 months. We've also understood that this is not President Biden's first go around in public office. We know that he's been around for four decades, and in that time has honestly been worked towards setting back racial justice and also immigrant justice. We know that the criminalization of Black migrants and additionally of Black, queer, and trans migrants has led to as few people as possible, one, being able to migrate to the United States, and two, once they've migrated, being able to stay safely outside of a detention center or outside of deportation proceedings. And that's something that BLMP and a number of other Black-led immigrant rights organizations are trying to address, are these gaps.
Yeah, BLMP being the acronym for your organization, Black LGBTQIA plus Migrant Project. I'm wondering, Deborah, there's this statistic, it surfaces a lot, that Black immigrants are way more likely than immigrants overall to be deported on criminal versus immigration grounds. 76% of Black immigrants are deported compared to 45% of all immigrants, and that's from Black Alliance for Just Immigration. Can you put that in some context for us?
Absolutely. Both within our membership at BLMP and just members of the community in general that I've worked with over the last decade, I have known so many people to be deported, so many Black people to have been detained for years on end and deported eventually to their native homelands. And to understand why there's such a massive discrepancy, we have to understand why forced migration happens to begin with. At this point, it's pretty like commonly known that people don't want to leave home unless there's nothing good waiting for them, unless their lives are in immediate danger and they have very little opportunity to live and thrive. And so we understand, we contextualize our membership's migration patterns through imperialism. We understand that imperialism historically has forced millions of people to migrate from their homelands. And because imperialism itself has a racist and capitalist character to it, so too do the migration patterns we see and the immigration laws we see today in 2021 in the United States. We understand that, you know, imperialism is a global system, of course, where the dominant political, economic, interests of one nation, such as the United States, can expropriate for their own enrichment the land, labor, raw materials, and markets of other people. And so BLMP sees the combination or the coupling of free trade exploitation, free trade economic exploitation with US militarism that has forced a lot of people to ironically end up right here on native land in the United States. And so, of course, by militarism, I'm referring to, you know, the hybrid wars we've been seeing happening for the last few decades, the drone strikes, the sanctions, the blockades, the political interventions that happen internationally. We have seen tied directly to a lot of our members' migration stories. So, for example, we have a number of members from Honduras who are a part of the Garifuna community. Garifuna, they're Afro-Caribbean, but are located in Honduras and other Central American countries. And what's happening with their mass migration from Honduras is that global interests have taken it upon themselves to take the coastal land where the Garifuna native communities live. Mm-hmm. And these zones that are being created displace migrants and very quickly displace queer and trans migrants who are already isolated within their community. And so we're seeing over the last couple decades this larger population, larger demographic of Garifuna people migrating to the United States. We're also seeing, you know, Cuban migrants, Black Cuban migrants in particular, migrating to the United States as a result of the 70-year U.S. blockade.
I think what you're saying really follows into this next question. When arriving in the U.S., do you see Black immigrants losing or sacrificing their individual and national identities? Can they still proudly be Ghanaian or South African or Jamaican or Haitian or Nicaraguan? Or are they lumped into one group as Black?
Well, we ourselves find unity and solidarity amongst the label of Black, using that term. It's a global political identity for us, and it feels really important to be able to feel that solidarity with billions of other Black people across the world. And also, we have found that because especially LGBTQ migrants are generally coming by themselves, we don't have large families, generally, and this does create a culture of isolation. It's precisely why we need to build a membership to be there for each other, to create a chosen family, to combat that isolation that people are forced into once they're here. There is, of course, communities that you can plug into that can help you embrace whatever identity, whatever your background is. And that being said, it's also, We live in a society that is very quick to distance other. And so if you're Jamaican and the Jamaican community in Milwaukee, for example, is not accepting of queer and trans migrants, then you will still feel isolated no matter what your ethnic background is. And that applies to so many people from across the African or the Black diaspora.
We're talking with Deborah, a co-founder of the UndocuBlack Network, where she supported deportation defense for current and formerly undocumented Black immigrants. Have you experienced anti-Blackness in our immigration system? What is your story? What policies would you support for Black migrants that are anti-racist and humane? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Deborah A. here on the Ideas Network.
Thank you.
We're discussing racial immigrant justice here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. In a letter to the White House this summer, the Black Alliance for Just Immigration, it explained how the immigration system is particularly hard for Black immigrants, who make up about 5% of the undocumented population in the U.S., but comprise about 20% of immigrants facing deportation on criminal grounds. Deborah A. co-founded an immigrant advocacy organization led by Black immigrants called UndocuBlack Network and is a national organizer for the Black LGBTQIA+ Migrant Project. She's with us for about 10 more minutes. Deborah, I'm wondering, with legal representation, are there enough lawyers for Black immigrants who face deportation, especially for Black immigrants who faced persecution?
There are not enough immigration attorneys who are decent, moral, and competent in general for all of the immigrant population, and most certainly not to represent all of the Black immigrants. So absolutely, there's a shortage. And oftentimes what happens is things get lost in translation. So attorneys who generally work with a different demographic perhaps literally don't have the capacity to speak in whatever language it is that a Black migrant speaks. There's so many. Mm-hmm. There's these things called country conditions packages. When you're an asylum seeker, you have to explain why it is you feel that you are being persecuted back home for whatever it is you say you're being persecuted for. And so to offer proof of that explanation, oftentimes it requires experts, professors, lecturers, people who are very familiar with the country conditions of where you're from. And if 90% of your client case is coming from Mexico or other like non-Black majority countries, then you're going to have information about the cases, the places where most of your clients are from. And so we see that a lot of times there's a lack of information about why specifically would someone from Jamaica, Ghana, Nigeria, Ethiopia migrate and seek asylum here in the United States as a result of, a lot of times inherited penal codes, especially in the Commonwealth countries. We saw in this year, January 2021, actually, the LGBT Rights Ghana organization, they opened an office in Accra, Ghana, and immediately they saw like this backlash. A lot of politicians, religious institutions, their mainstream media, political figures, they were all just saying, oh my goodness, we can't have an office. That makes it real. That makes LGBTQ people real. Mm. And their office was just weeks after opening raided by their law enforcement. Mm. And that caused a migration out because people felt unsafe. And so we saw activists both here and all over the world, rallying to challenge the regressive smear campaign that was mounted against LGBTQ.
We're talking with Deborah A., who is a national organizer for Black LGBTQIA+ Migrant Project, as we look at the experiences of Black migrants coming from around the world. Are you Black or part of the LGBTQ+ community? How accessible are resources in your area? Do you have trouble finding community? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas@wpr.org. Deborah, are you still there?
I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. I think there was just a little drop there. I'm wondering, your project started providing cash assistance to migrants and first-generation people dealing with the effects of COVID. What challenges have you seen amid the pandemic?
The pandemic has obviously created hurdles for people who would like to work in a healthy, safe environment. A lot of our members and community members in general are domestic laborers, day laborers, work as like custodial staff or in retail and positions of that nature. And so especially for those who were CNAs or home health aides, they were rapidly getting ill with COVID and having to take time off and then losing their jobs because of the lack of worker protections for migrants. And we were able to create a fund, a mutual aid fund, one that members have contributed to and then offer to other members who are in need. And it's specifically for our members who are LGBTQ migrants and first generation people, Black migrants. And yeah, it's come in handy to help subside people over through the emergencies they're experiencing and the crisis.
Anti-Black racism and persecution, this is a global problem. You said it at the outset. And really, I think the key question before America is what is to be done about it? What must change now? I want to pose that to you.
Yeah, the only way to really stop the forced migration of people is to also, like I said at the top of that show, is to stop imperialism in all of the forms that it takes. And it's such a broad word, I know, but we've just connected too many people's stories directly to horrific, you know, international policy. And it's forced a lot of people away from their homes. And then once people get here, we've seen these detention centers to be extraordinarily racist, the guards, the wardens, the officers, the double criminalization of Black migrants once we're here. For trans people who are walking, sometimes they're criminalized for walking while trans. The list goes on and on that particularly impacts Black, queer, and trans migrants.
Deborah, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Have a good one.
You too. Deborah, a national organizer for the Black LGBTQIA plus Migrant Project. We have a link to the project at WPR.org/mornings. Tomorrow after 7:30, our conversations on immigration continue as we learn about a growing support system for undocumented college students. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.